Hey friends, this is Huga Nurse Podcast, where we discuss things that you can do today to improve your health by being intentional about what is in your home and in your environment. I am Rachel Zimmer. I'm a nurse practitioner and a researcher whose work centers around food as medicine and health equity programs. I am also the owner of Huga Abode, which is an online business that supports women makers from all over the world. Today, we are going to be talking about all things nutrition, and I had the pleasure of speaking with Diane Schenberger, a registered dietitian who helped me start Fresh Food RX, a food as medicine program that provides weekly produce boxes and health coaching for people who have chronic health conditions like high blood pressure and diabetes. We will discuss what we have learned from our work together, give you tips on how to integrate more plants into your daily routine, and discuss the important role that vegetables play for your mood and your mental health. So join me today as we discuss all things food and nutrition. So today I want to introduce you to Diane Schenberger. She is a registered dietitian who I have known for years now and works with me on food as medicine programs. And she's a ruthless advocate for people, especially when it comes to healthy food access and understanding how to take care of your bodies. So welcome, Diane.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah. So I'm going to start off with, maybe we should just talk about how we've gotten to know each other. Gosh, I don't even remember like when we first met. Was it through the mobile health program? Yeah, sometime during COVID. Yeah. So you were helping me with some nutrition education for the patients that we were seeing. And then we said, you know what, we're going to work together on trying to help more people get healthy food. And we've gone on this journey of starting food as medicine programs. You've educated hundreds of people now within these programs to help them take better care of themselves. And even when they don't have good access to healthy foods because of finances, you're sort of the brainstorming, you know, activator for people. And so they feel more empowered to take care of themselves even with low resources. So I wanted to start today just by saying, you know, what is your passion? Like, what has made you so passionate about your work? It's obvious that you're passionate about your work in nutrition and food access. And I was just curious, from your perspective, what started you on that journey?
Well, it's very interesting because my nutrition career started, obviously, many years ago, 40 years ago, just knowing that nutrition could impact the way that you feel, your health, you know, and somewhat sports performance, really. I was initially starting in that and morphed into clinical trials and research, which I love because it puts you at the forefront of evidence-based nutrition, which is so important. But when back in 2011, I believe it was, I started to work for a school called the Milton Hershey School. And it is a boarding school for kids in poverty. It's a free boarding school. And it changed the way that I thought about nutrition for all and how impactful their diet really can be in terms of, I watched kids come in with very poor health, having really poor diets, and turn it around and try to turn it around for their families as well. And it just stole my heart. And I've been doing that work ever since.
Well, I didn't know that about you.
Yeah.
Started with kids. Yep. What were some things that you found were empowering to the kids? Because that's a different way to go about nutrition inside of a home, right? To go through a child's
eyes. this was a boarding school, it was really, really impactful as to how the food insecurity affected them, because they were basically, the common thing is to overeat at one meal because you don't know where your next meal is coming from. Mm-hmm. And you could see all of that. And even though at the school, they had food, they had meals in the student homes, they had the habits that they had because they weren't sure. And so you had to get them comfortable with being sure and learn how to eat more than just chicken fingers and pizza that a lot of kids ate. Mm-hmm. And to realize that there were so many different ways for them to develop and to feel better. And they were like, I'm not doing anything. I just feel so much better. They were starting to move more, whether it was, you know, coming home from school and raking some leaves. It wasn't necessarily formal exercise. It was just move. And it was try a new food. And these are some vegetables on your plate. And so it was working with the kids, but it was also working with the house parents and helping them to serve the healthiest meals that they could. And working in this case, food service was all encompassing on the campus. So we were able to impact food service that they served at the elementary, middle, and high school, the kids, mm-hmm. as well as the house parents. And then when we had the opportunity, we could work with the children's families. That was a little bit more limited because they didn't live there and they didn't always visit. And there was a lot of other issues and other problems that came into place. But you could really see the impact. And you watch them kind of grow through it. I did a lot with middle school when they were growing. And so it was really fun, really interesting and impactful for me.
So you mentioned something called food insecurity, and I'm going to guess that maybe some of the people listening might not know what food insecurity is. And I know that's our world and we throw it around, that term, a lot, but do you want to just talk about that for a second? What does it mean when someone is food insecure?
Well, it can mean a lot of things. They might not have enough food for the next meal. They might not have enough money for quality nutrition and, you know, being able to afford like fruits and vegetables or fresh fruits and vegetables. Sometimes it's knowledge and they buy what they know, and they may have additional resources or reasonable resources if they knew what to look for and how to maybe look and prepare healthier foods on a budget. It's a combination of things, but for the most part, they don't always know where their next meal is coming from. And that can just have a huge, huge impact on one's health, self-esteem, and just the way that they go about their everyday life.
Yeah, I think that's really important to keep in mind. I know where I live, you know, 1 out of 5 children have trouble getting access to healthy foods on a regular basis. And so I'm glad that we defined that. You know, we've been working together on what we call food as medicine programs. And basically those can look different ways, where sometimes you can deliver produce boxes to people's homes. You can do vouchers where people can go to farmers markets. And one thing that we decided to do were the produce boxes. And so we've really focused in on, you know, integrating more fruits and vegetables into people's diets and then doing some health coaching along the way. And I think there's been a few things that have been really impactful, you know, as we've learned through the years. And I was just curious, you know, what are things that when you're talking to people who starting to think about changing the way that they eat or the way that they think about food, what are some of the things, the tips that you give them just to start them on their journey?
Well, each person's an individual, because it depends upon what their current eating pattern looks like. Also, what kinds of diseases do they have? A lot of people that have been, at least within our work, have never been given education on how what they eat can impact their chronic disease and their health. So oftentimes I would start there with, you know, do you know what it means to have diabetes and how that impacts and how what you eat impacts your blood sugar. So a lot of people wouldn't even know that. So it might be just some basic education and then back it off to say, well, let's take a look at what you're doing and what are you eating? And, you know, what do you think you're doing that is good for you or is better for your blood sugar? And what is it that's not as good? And for some people, at least in our program, they weren't even interested in making changes. They came in because they wanted the additional produce. And I said, that's okay. More produce is just going to be healthier for you. And so over time, they've found that they've eaten more vegetables and now they want more vegetables. So it's not always, let's make a sudden change. And I think that's one of the things that's really, really nice about our program, because while we've incorporated nutrition coaching into the program, we haven't incorporated a structured eating plan that's forced upon anybody. And so we take where they're at and what, if any, motivation to change they have developed or they develop over time. So they can have many different starting points, but over time, over our year-long study, almost everybody has seen a change and a benefit, whether it's been for 2 weeks or it's been for 12 months.
Yeah, I think that's really impactful. You know, I've been a part of eating programs myself as I've been on my journey of, you know, weight loss or the fluctuations in weight. And it can feel really hard to be prescribed like a certain regimen because you always feel like, well, they don't understand my needs, right? So someone's coming in and they're telling me what to eat, but they really don't understand the culture of my house. They don't understand what I need. They may not even understand what I like. Most likely they don't. And so I really like the way that you approach people's eating habits, because it just starts with where are you? And then how do we make incremental changes? I think too, the studies show that plant-based diets, you know, are really good for you. But sometimes that can look really hard to get to, right? To eat more healthy or to eat more fruits and vegetables if you're in a space where you can't even afford your next meal. And so there's a trajectory, right? There's a continuum. It's not a one or other. I think maybe, could you speak to that a little bit?
Sure. Well, a couple of things. First of all, I'm going to take a step back a little bit to say that with the program, one of the things that I really, really learned and found beneficial was how much of a partnership it was. And I oftentimes learned so much from each individual that was part of the program. Different ways of doing something, different ways of thinking about it that I might not have said, and somebody else would, I would then give that to somebody else. Like, for example, there was a couple of weeks that our produce box had a lot of cabbage in it, and people would say, well, what else can I do with cabbage? Well, one person would say, I tried this, and it was like cabbage steaks, for example, slicing it, grilling it. I was like, what a great idea. Not something I've ever thought of. Is it okay if I share that with the next person? So there was a lot of partnerships that came throughout that. And I think that that's really important to realize. We don't always know what you like. If you're starting, you know, a new program, we don't know what you like. You tell us. You let's talk about that. Let's work together, because you can teach me and I can teach you. And together you motivate each other. So I think that that's really an important component. And then also when you talk about like the plant-based diets, I guess I hesitate with the word diet because diet feels prescripted. Plant-based eating is more of an eating pattern. People speak about Mediterranean diet, but we know that the Mediterranean is an eating pattern. So it's a way of making your choices. It's not that you must do X, Y, and Z. It's how can you fit the whole alphabet into your meal or into your eating, right? So plant-based diets or plant-based eating pattern has its benefits because there's a huge amount of variety, because you've got lots of different fruits and vegetables, you've got whole grains, you've got your nuts, your seeds, your beans, but you also have your animal-based proteins. There's nothing that's saying that you can't have those foods. It's not vegan or vegetarian. It can be more so in that direction or less so in that direction, but it's more that more often you choose foods that are plant-based, that come from the ground, so to speak. That also creates a focus on whole foods and less processed foods. You can take a vegan diet and it can become a highly processed diet by eating all the foods that are made vegan. That's not necessarily going to be as helpful for you as plant-based, whole food, plant-forward kind of eating pattern.
Oh, I really love that. Because I would say that it is an eating pattern and it takes you out of the, oh, I failed, right? So if I eat something that's not plant-based one day, because that you know, whatever it is, you know, non-plant-based food over there looks really good and I just want it, then you feel like a failure if you said, oh, I've just strayed from my diet, my quote unquote diet. And so choosing plant-based eating patterns feels like, oh, okay, I'm making these choices on a daily basis. And, you know, once in a while, that it leaves some freedom for choosing something different.
Right, right, exactly. So, you know, take one step towards making a healthier choice, and maybe another step that is your old pattern or is your old behavior. Because you, as you start a new pattern or you start a new change, it's hard to stick with that. Start with one change until it's a behavior, and then you incorporate another. And over time, you say, my portions are a little smaller than they were a year ago. My vegetable intake is a little bit greater. Have I ever thought of having a salad with my omelet for breakfast instead of home fries? Well, no, but try it once. And then you might not want it every time, but you might have it more often 6 months later than you had. So you were incorporating a larger amount of vegetables or produce as the day goes on. So little changes can add up over time. And that's really how you become healthier.
Yeah, I love that.
It's not about the scale. It's, you know, but it's about how do you make your body as healthy as it can be and do that over time.
So we've been doing this together for a couple of years now. And we've seen some people, we've heard some stories. So using this very same process for the people that we, you know, help care for, what are some of the things that come to mind when you're thinking about these incremental changes that lead to health, you know, over time? What are some stories that pop to mind?
Oh my. You know, I think, well, through the study and in general, I think people start to feel better and they are happier and they don't always know why they're happier. And no pun intended, but my gut tells me that it's because they're eating healthier. They feel better. They feel better. They sleep better. They sleep better. They are healthier. Then sleep impacts happiness. Sleep impacts the way you interact to that next person. So all these things kind of come together, and we have seen a lot of depression, you know, and even fatigue, loneliness. Those things change because people start to feel more confident in themselves. So then they go out in the world a little bit more. Maybe they strike up a conversation more easily. So everything kind of feeds together. And I won't say that nutrition is the only thing that impacts that, but it certainly is a huge player.
Yeah. So, you know, we have seen some changes with people's depression. And I think one thing we should make clear is, you know, when we're talking about a study, we're doing a food as medicine study together. So we're providing, you know, produce boxes to people's homes every week. And then also they get this individualized counseling and coaching with Diane. And so one of the things that we're measuring is depression, and we've seen changes in the depression that people are talking about. And, you know, some of that's nutrition. There's more understanding now of the gut biome, right? So how serotonin is built in the gut, it's produced in the gut, and the building blocks of serotonin are vegetables, go figure. And so maybe do you want to speak to that a little bit? Just even people aren't going to be as interested in like all the science related things probably, but just in general, you know, how those building blocks are important to mood in addition to those other changes.
Yeah. Well, you know, they, what you eat impacts your GI tract, both on your gut microbiome, as well as the functionality of your GI tract. And I will say we've had several people who've had some GI issues in this study, and they've been resolved through an increase in produce, increased intake in fruits and vegetables, and increased variety, trying new foods, all those kinds of things can impact the function of your GI tract. But in addition, we know that it's increasing your microbiome. So the bacteria that's in your GI tract, we have a balance of good and bad, but what we have a huge amount of bacteria in our gut. So that's mm-hmm. what we think of as our probiotic. Our prebiotic is the foods that nourish those bacteria. So that's the fibers that are not digested in your foods. So if you eat more fruits and vegetables and you eat a good variety, you're getting lots of different kinds of fibers to feed all those different bacteria and keep the bacteria healthy. The healthier that microbiome or those bacteria are, the more able they are to support your physiology and producing your serotonin and all sorts of things that impact your chronic diseases, your health, your gut brain axis, all of it.
Yeah, I love that. So, you know, we're talking about some of the benefits of incorporating more fruits and vegetables into daily life. What are some challenges that you've heard people bring up and some strategies you've given to help overcome some of those barriers?
Probably the biggest challenge is knowledge. A lot of people don't have or don't realize they have the knowledge and the skills to support that meal planning and how to prepare a certain fruits and vegetables. So one of our education programs, we talked about some of the fall produce and we had different squashes to see what they look like. And, you know, this is what it looks like if you've got buying it at the grocery store. This is what it looks like when you've cut it open. This is what it looks like when it's cooked and prepared in this way. And here's a recipe. So by taking somebody through those steps, then they're not so like, why would I buy that? I don't even know what to do with it. And that's what happens if you're not familiar with a lot of different fruits and vegetables, or if you're not familiar with them in the format of fresh. Some people said they'd never had fresh asparagus until the study, but then they'd only had canned. So they didn't know what it would look like or how to prepare it. And so when they get it, they say, what do I do with this? So we became a resource for them to reach out and say, you're not sure what to do with it. Just text me, call me. We'll give you, you know, some ideas. So it's important to get some of those tips. And it's also important to accept that you're going to have some education along the way. I mean, I don't know everything about all foods for certainly, and I'm not an expert chef. So I can learn something from somebody who knows how to cook something that I don't know how to cook and vice versa. So that's part of it. And then I also think accepting that it's okay to have, everything doesn't have to be fresh. It's okay to have frozen, keep some frozen diced onions and peppers around because it's easy to grab a few. And maybe you're tired by the end of the day and cutting an onion is difficult. Or maybe your eyes tear a lot and that's not something that you want to do. So it's an easier way to incorporate it and get some flavors from that onion, for example. Or you can have canned beans. You just would want to drain them and rinse them so you could decrease the sodium content. So you can do tricks of making things a little bit easier to prepare and not everything needs to come from scratch. But the biggest recommendation is really to say, make a plan. What will you make this week? And how can you make something and make enough of it to have some leftovers so you're not constantly cooking, but yet you're developing your cooking skills and you're growing that part of your skill set.
Yeah, you bring up a good point because even the way that you set up your kitchen can make that easier, right? So there's even some tips on how to make a meal prep station in your kitchen or just keeping things close by. Do you ever provide any tips like that to people?
Sometimes, you know, I think it's even the simplest things like keeping a sharp knife available can make that cutting a little bit easier. Or sometimes it's, well, how do I cut the zucchini? Well, you could cut it like this, this, or this. And so you'd give those tips. Sometimes, like I had somebody inquire, well, I have these cucumbers and I have two cucumbers and they're getting bad. I can't eat them fast enough. So I said, how about you pickle them? Here's a recipe so that you can then enjoy them, but you don't have to eat it all in the next 24 hours.
Right.
So sometimes there was that. And that particular individual is doing a whole bunch of pickling of vegetables now. She's sent me pictures and it's really exciting. It's really exciting to see. So.
That's fun. Yeah. I think sometimes I'll give people tips too, like keep a cutting board, you know, nearby and keep some little containers that you can like, you know, put your prep in if you have a slow day on the weekend, potentially to just, you know, cut some things up ahead of time to your Correct. Point about meal prepping.
Yep. And also the other big thing is if you make a meal that's for four people and you have two people, take half of the meal and put it in a container and put it away before you start to eat, because some people will go back for seconds and then they won't have enough for that second meal. Right. So if you've really made four portions, put those two away and then enjoy your meal. So you don't end up with one and a half and then you have other problems.
Yeah. Good tip. Yeah. So how has this work changed you? How have you been changed by this work? I know you talked a lot about it being a partnership and you've learned a lot, but what are things that, you know, have impacted you?
Well, honestly, I expected or was hoping for positive change from our participants, but the magnitude of the change for everybody has just, it's been overwhelming in a positive way. Mm-hmm. So I feel connected and I feel like I want to stay connected. I want to see how are you 2 years later and things like that. But I feel like we're just the tip of the iceberg on the things that we can do for people across the country and really across the world. It's food, and everybody has a right to healthy food. And the more that we can spread that message and do that work, the better off we all are. And so I just feel like we're in it together and let's make it happen.
Yeah, I know. I think about that too. Sometimes I get really sad, actually, that I have told you before. Sometimes these programs make me sad because we find these really positive changes that are almost life-changing for people. And then once our programs are over, sometimes it feels like we're, you know, letting people down because the societal systems aren't set up to help give everybody access to food in a healthy way, right? So there's what we call food deserts where people just don't have healthy grocery stores in their communities. And I am hopeful that maybe our programs will help change that narrative, because if you have healthier people, you have a better workforce. If you have healthier people, you have, you know, kids that can sit and learn because they're not hungry. Right. If you have a better workforce, you have better emotional support because they have the building blocks that they need. And we don't need a pill to build up the microbiome. We have food to do that. Right. It's just the right foods. And so I think sometimes this feels like great work, but sometimes it feels like really hard work. And I think you're saying that as well.
Oh yeah. It's hard, but there's a component of it that's very sad, right? Because now as we're coming towards the end, as I'm talking to people and I know I won't see them in their last visit, or I won't see them again, I think, wow, what's going to happen to you? And some of them will say, well, what's going to happen when this is over? Mm-hmm. Will my health go back to the way it was a year ago? Mm-hmm. I've had people point blank ask me that question. Mm-hmm. And it's very sad to think, you know, how much they know how much they feel better.
Yeah.
Yet they're fearful that is going to return, and that it was just a temporary 1 year hiatus of feeling good. So that is very sad. And you just think there's gotta be a way to make this continue or make this last.
Yeah.
So
there are resources, you know, that we think about a lot in terms of the community. What are some resources that you would provide or recommend to people that are listening to the podcast or saying, you know what, I want to take care of my body better, and maybe there's some things I could do to get started. Do you have any, you know, recommendations for resources to help them get started when it comes to nutrition?
Well, I think obviously, you know, working within the community that you're in, with whether it's community gardens, there's a lot you can do with just simple things, growing some of your own produce. It may not be as expansive, but it's certainly some, and including like herbs and spices, herbs in particular, because they're relatively easy to grow, and then they can keep that variety going. And variety is not something we've talked a whole lot about, but it's very, very important. So that you don't have the same thing every day. You don't have the same color every day. People think, did you eat your green vegetables? But obviously there's yellow and orange and purple and vegetables as well. So, you know, try thinking about things like not having that same vegetable. Maybe you can't have as much as you would want, but don't always have the same thing. So that would be one way to improve your own individual health without, you know, having to have the resources for all of it. And again, frozen foods, frozen vegetables are going to be a little bit cheaper than fresh. And there's a lot of recipes that you won't tell the difference in. Some canned, as long as you're draining them again and keep buying lower sodium, that's going to be also give you some of the nutrients that you would have from the fresh. But in a lot of ways, buying that food fresh can be not as destructive to your budget as you think. It's just as you slowly get used to preferring that taste over some of the processed foods, then you decrease buying those processed foods. Some of them can be expensive, and then of course the impact on your health is even more so.
Yeah, that's really helpful. Do you have any books that you're reading right now that you really like?
Oh, oof. I am reading a book on, I don't remember the name of it. It's by Mark Wynn. It is, it's basically a food, and we're in this together. I should get it for you, but, it's basically either, work together to feed the community or starve alone. And it's really about the food industry and how destructive it could be, you know, when you get into too much food processing. The ultra processed foods we know is the downfall of both our individual health as well as the environment. And it's not whether or not any one person can afford the vegetables or the produce. We're all in this together, because feeding everybody is what's going to be the most helpful. So working together as a society. So it's quite interesting.
That sounds like a great book. Yeah, I'll put the title, send it to me, and I'll put the title in the show notes. That sounds
okay.
Awesome.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. All right, anything else that you want to talk about before I ask you my last question?
Oh. No, I just think that this study has really been great. It's sort of culminated the work that I've done in general and the impact that I feel like I've been able to have in on an individual basis. But then you take this study and each person's so unique, and but still has benefited, and I've benefited, and just people that I didn't initially, even in the first 4 to 6 months, wasn't thinking that they were benefiting as much, and then it has come out over time. So there's a lot of things I've seen with other kinds of programs. And I think that I'm biased, of course, but what we have created is really a nice balance, because you're able to take people from over a year, you see the way those changes become habits. And if you have too short of a program, you don't see that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are able to pick your own vegetables and fruit too much, you don't see they don't have the opportunity to try new vegetables as much, because it's not there for them. So we've kind of had a little bit of everything. And I think having the health coaching support has really been beneficial. So it's been a nice balance. So I'm excited to see how the results come out too.
Yeah. You know, you reminded me of something my husband and I were talking about, peas, for example. So my son, we have a garden, and every time peas are planted, I can't get them in the house because he picks them all and he eats them right off the vine. He loves Good. Them. And so my husband was saying, you know, I used to hate peas when I was growing up. And I said, well, how did you eat them? Like, what were they like? And he said, well, they were mushy. Like, they came out of a can and they were mushed up. And that's what I thought peas were. And so it was really quite fascinating. We were talking about it. And I said, you know, Daniel's experience, our son's experience with peas is completely different because he picks them off the vine. He plants them. He plants the peas with me. We have them growing now and he's watching them. He's like, when are they going to sprout? Because he will eat them as soon as they sprout, you know? So of course he likes them to be a very certain specific size before he'll eat them, but he's
right.
But he's his experience with that particular vegetable is completely different. And so I think, you know, one thing that we're finding is that people are having new experiences with food that they've never had before because it's in their raw shapes. And you wouldn't think that that would be as impactful, but it really is because the taste is so different. The texture is so different. The impacts on your body is so different.
And so, and we've had some people who have said, my kids love getting this produce box because they want to see what's in it. It's like getting a surprise.
Yeah.
And then if there's something new, they say, what can we do with this? How can we make this week? A couple of people have said, oh, my kids tried butter lettuce and fresh spinach. They'd never tried it before.
Right.
You know, so all of those, I think the impacts on family have been huge. So even though we've had one individual as a participant, we've had a lot of, you know, couples and families be impacted as well.
So I was thinking about one person had said, it's like Casper the ghost comes in the kitchen and then the produce is gone. You know, she was talking about her teenagers. Yes. She's like, okay, who swiped them today?
So yes.
That's kind of fun. Absolutely. All right. Last question. So if you could be a macaroni shape, what macaroni shape would you be and why?
Well, I would probably be some sort of a twisted cavatappi or twisted pasta. And probably for a lot of reasons. One is I was a gymnast when I was little, so I used to like to twist and such, and a diver for that matter. But I think more importantly, the twisting just reflects both how your life changes over time. And mine has certainly changed a lot. I've lived in 8 different states and, 8 different houses, 8 different states, 8 or 9 different states. So I think life has always had its changes. And I think from a nutrition standpoint, that's a classic field for constant change. You have to learn how to adapt and pivot as needed, both with, you know, for example, eggs, you know, don't eat eggs, eat eggs, don't eat eggs, eat eggs. Right? So nutrition has always had those things. And it's because there's so much to learn. There's so much new that comes out as right. That we benefit from. So you have to be able to pivot. You have to be able to adapt. And life is kind of the same way. So I'm a twisted pasta.
Oh, I love that. Twisted pasta. I think I agree with that one. All right. Thank you for being here today.
I absolutely
learned a lot.
I always learn a lot from awesome.
I just want to take a moment and thank you so much for joining us today. Once more, I want to thank Diane Schenberger for joining me on the show to talk to us about her work as a nutritionist and her thoughts about how to integrate a more plant-forward approach into your eating habits each day. Our research together has been very rewarding and very challenging at the same time. There are many communities across the United States that do not have access to healthy foods, and this is causing significant health problems for both children and adults. If you want to learn more about ways that you can help be an advocate for access, I will include some links in the show notes. Also, be sure to follow me on social media and sign up for my newsletter at hugaabode.com, where I'll talk and dig into some of these things some more. The links for this, plus the resources that Diane spoke about today, are all included in the show notes. And don't forget to leave us a review. In next week's episode, we will talk with Christina Saldana. She is the owner of Camel City Wellness, and she's a physician's assistant. Camel City Wellness is an integrative women's health practice. She and I are going to dig into hormonal improvement and hormonal empowerment and how to navigate women's cycle changes in your 30s and beyond. So if you have any questions or you want to hear us talk about something on the podcast, be sure to email us at rachel@hugaabode.com. Until next time, be well, my friends, and see you again soon.